From launch to global shutdown, the world's most capable code model erased by American executive order with no return date.
This is the AI Expert Edition, number 17. The week agents moved from prototype to deployable unit, and supply, regulation, and reliability raced to catch up. We begin with what changed at the development bench. Two releases this week that, taken together, define what it means to operate agents at real scale, not in a research sandbox, not in an isolated pilot.
The first is Databricks OmniGent, open source under Apache 2.0 license. Databricks was direct about the motivation. Their own organization of over 5,000 engineers had adopted code agents early, Claude Code, OpenAI Codex, custom agents over proprietary SDKs. And the problem that emerged wasn't about model capability, it was operational. With four or five agents running in parallel, engineers spent time manually copying context between terminals, Google Docs, and Slack. There was no single harness capable of sharing state or delegating across tool boundaries.
The architecture has two central components, a runner that wraps any agent in an isolated session with a uniform API. Messages and files go in, text streams and tool calls come out. A server that hosts policies, sharing logic, and multimodal access. The stack operates above existing harnesses without replacing them. A single-line YAML change swaps the underlying model or ports a custom agent between Claude Code, the OpenAI Agents SDK, and the Claude Agents SDK. Composition happens at the meta layer. A single workflow can orchestrate sub-agents running in different harnesses simultaneously.
What matters to teams putting this in production are session policies. OmniGent applies cost and security at the session boundary, not at the model level. The system can pause an agent and request human confirmation after each $100 spent on LLM compute. Security policies are dynamic per session. The system can require human approval for a Git push only after the agent has downloaded an NPM package in that specific session. A hardened OS sandbox intercepts network requests at an egress proxy. Credentials like GitHub tokens are never exposed to the agent process, only injected into approved outbound calls.
State tracking per session, not a static rule list.
But Databricks hasn't published latency benchmarks for the overhead introduced by the meta harness. The open question for platform architects, if the policy engine or state tracker degrades, all composed agents stop. You now have two layers of abstraction to debug instead of one. Adding coordination above already opinionated harnesses creates a new single point of failure. And when something breaks, the failure crosses two layers before you can attribute it.
The second release is GitHub Copilot Desktop, available since June 2, 2026 for Pro, Pro Plus, Business, and Enterprise subscribers. The core proposition, a developer supervising up to 10 agents working in the same repository at the same time, with guaranteed branch isolation.
The isolation mechanism is Git Worktrees. Each agent session runs in its own fully checked out branch in a separate file system path. One agent triages a production bug. Another implements a backlog issue. A third responds to review comments in the same repository at the same time. The app creates and destroys these worktrees automatically. When a session is ready to integrate, Agent Merge handles CI, review feedback, and merge as soon as all configured conditions are met. On policy-protected branches, it requires human approval, cannot bypass branch protection rules.
The scale behind the timing of this release is revealing. Commits on GitHub reached 1.4 billion per month, roughly double year over year. GitHub Actions exceeded 2 billion minutes per week. When the platform's own coding agent launched, usage grew approximately 200 times in 6 months, well beyond capacity planning. CTO Vlad Fedorov acknowledged in April 2026 that the team needed to design for 30 times current scale. And today, Copilot is the first, second, and third most prolific contributor to GitHub's own codebase. CLI first, coding agent second, code review third.
CPO Lario Rodriguez described the distinction between the two modes of work like this. Chat is where you instruct, discuss, and reason about ambiguity. Canvases are where that intent becomes visible work you can inspect, direct, and verify. It's a real operational distinction, and the architecture betting on GitHub primitives, issues, PRs, actions, code review, a scaffolding for agentic workflows has genuine integration advantage for teams already operating entirely within the platform.
But the detail no press release highlighted is the billing change.
On June 1st, GitHub migrated to token-based billing. One AI credit costs 1 cent. A typical agentic session consumes $30 to $40. Teams running multiple parallel sessions reported increases of 10 to 50 times versus the previous fixed price model. Pro subscribers get $10 per month in credits. Three parallel sessions at $35 each consume the entire monthly budget before noon. Copilot Max at $100 per month includes $100 in AI credits plus flexible allowance, but 10 parallel sessions at $35 each already exceed that envelope.
Any team evaluating the app needs to model credit consumption before enabling broad access. The $30 to $40 per session number is a floor, not a ceiling. Omnigent, by comparison, has an explicit $100 gate. Copilot doesn't yet have a native equivalent. Now to where these agents fail. And the literature this week is the densest we've reviewed on production runtime.
Is the operative word. The most endemic and highest risk failure class is what the authors call chained hallucination and fabrication. When the runtime hits an error, the model doesn't throw an exception. It rewrites the error into a coherent, plausible conclusion delivered directly to the user. The authors call this fail plausible. The observer isn't just blind to the error. The observer is actively deceived by the failure signal itself. The system fabricates its alibi.
And existing detection methods catch this pattern?
No. Approximately 70% of silent failures were detected by human observation of final output, not by automated tests or audits. A retrospective review of 15 incidents showed 0% ex ante prevention and 87% regression blocking. Audit doesn't prevent failure. Audit blocks failure that already happened and only works if it recurs the same way.
And the latency of incidents?
From 13 hours to 60 days. The longest duration failures lived at the seams between components, the tool proxy, the memory plane, and LLM providers, where no tests run. Code complexity wasn't a predictor. Boundary surface area was. The paper proposes a physical integrity gate engine and an agent delivery engineering protocol as deterministic countermeasures. But the central conclusion is that multi-provider systems have to be treated as distributed systems, where the most dangerous failure mode is indistinguishable from correct output, and log aggregation and governance checks are necessary, but not sufficient.
The second paper this week came from a real software project, not a lab, and it documents what happens when engineers do the intuitively obvious thing when an agent breaks. and get worse results.
Hui Zhang and Shuren Song published on June 17th a report of 391 consecutive sessions of AI collaboration on the Bang V3 project over approximately 1 month. The failure mode they identified is called index sickness. The mechanism is counterintuitive. As teams add formal structure to prompts, symbolic ID systems, numbered rules, constraint layers, they expect clearer guardrails. The Bang V3 record shows the opposite.
Once the symbolic system exceeds a threshold of complexity, the model stops reasoning about the business domain semantically. It enters self-referential pattern matching within the symbolic layer itself, producing outputs that seem internally consistent but are disconnected from the actual state of the project. The paper calls the canonical failure phantom legislation. The LLM generates rules or code constructs coherent in the abstract, but physically disconnected from reality.
And this aligns directly with what Chroma documented in 2025, testing 18 frontier models. All degrade as input length increases. Code agents are most affected. Each file read, grep result, and tool output accumulates in the context window for the rest of the session, while logical structure creates dense distractions. In multi-document question and answer, accuracy dropped over 30% when the relevant document was in intermediate positions rather than at the beginning or end. NVIDIA's Ruler benchmark places effective context at 50 to 65% of advertised capacity for most models. And this is the most counterintuitive result. Chroma discovered that models perform better in scrambled, incoherent contexts than in logically structured ones. Structural density is a liability, not an asset.
And the solution Zhang and Song found?
Baseline log physical separation. Keep the project's stable architecture, domain, design decisions, canonical state, in a separate document from the current session log. The LLM receives a clean snapshot of truth at the start of each session, not a growing heap of state mixed with conversational noise. Volume of AI instructions dropped approximately 75%. Index sickness didn't recur in the following 150 sessions.
The authors call the underlying principle the Pang principle, law of semantic vitality. Natural language with explicit purpose carries far superior information quality to symbolic expression. More rules, less semantics.
It's architecturally identical to the logic of Claude.md and Claude Code. Stable documentation loaded up front, individual files fetched just in time via GLEP and GLOB, bypassing obsolete indexing. Zhang and Song arrived at the same place independently. The difficulty isn't technical, it's organizational. Engineering teams are rewarded for adding constraints when something breaks. Removing symbolic scaffolding and trusting natural language seems to reduce rigor. The Bang V3 record says that instinct is the cause of the problem, not the solution.
Failure to offense. A paper published on June 17 shows LLM agents in the position of security attacker with results that have already entered disclosure.
OpenAnt from Gnostic, a six-stage open source pipeline under Apache 2.0 that scans codebases at repository scale and validates each finding with a real exploit executed in a sandbox container before surfacing any result. On OpenSSL, 15,232 functions parsed across 1,769 files. After filtering by reachability from attacker-controlled entry points, CLI handlers, callbacks, main functions, the analysis surface dropped 97%, from 15,232 units down to 390.
No LLM is invoked until stage 3. The first two are pure static graph analysis.
In stage 3, a SONET4 agent classifies each reachable unit by exposure level, externally exposed, internally exposed, security control, or neutral. The iteration continues until classification is confident or hits a cap of 20 iterations, cost from 0.13 cents per iteration for simple functions up to $10.92 at the cap for complex call chains, median on OpenSSL, 9 iterations per unit. After stage 3, the 390 reachable units collapse to 49 externally exposed, total reduction of 99.6% from the original count. Stage 4 uses Claude Opus 4.6 for vulnerability pattern analysis. Of the 49, 28 were flagged as potentially vulnerable.
And the adversarial verifier, stage 5, is where the architecture diverges from market standard.
The model assumes an attacker persona with explicit constraints. No server access, no database credentials, no local file access, no CLI commands.
If the only viable attack path requires local shell access, the finding is classified not exploitable and discarded. Prompts like act as an attacker without constraints are the root cause of high false positive rates in LLM-based scanners. Models are agreeable by default and construct plausible attacks assuming capabilities that simply don't exist in production. Stage 6 converts surviving candidates into actual exploit environments, executes in short-lived sandbox containers, and tears down the environment afterward. Nostic is currently in disclosure process for findings in OpenSSL, WordPress, and Flowise. The broader implication, the same model your agent uses to write code can find exploitable vulnerabilities in code other agents wrote. Attack surface and detection surface now inhabit the same stack.
Now to the dimension that wasn't on any engineering team's roadmap 6 months ago, regulation and geopolitics as a concrete operational variable.
On June 12, 2026, at 5:21 p.m. Eastern Time, Secretary of Commerce Howard Lutnick invoked the Export Controls Reform Act to suspend access to Anthropic's Fable 5 and Mythos 5 for all foreign nationals, including non-citizen Anthropic employees. Anthropic has no way to verify nationality by API request. It did the only thing that guaranteed compliance. It disabled both models globally. 3 days after launch, every API call returned an error.
The technical trigger cited by the government was a jailbreak technique involving code reading to identify flaws.
Anthropic says the same technique is available on other models in production, including GPT 5.5. No universal jailbreak was found in pre-launch red teaming conducted by the US government, the UK AISI, and third parties. Lutnick's letter provided no specific national security justification. Anthropic disagrees with the decision, is complying, and has sent senior engineers to Washington to negotiate with the Commerce Department. As of June 17, there was no restoration date.
The models remain in Anthropic's catalog. Claude Opus 4.7, 62% on SWE Bench Pro, $15 per million input tokens and $75 per million output tokens. Claude Sonnet 4.5, Claude Haiku 4.5, and the complete Claude 4.5 family. Any request for Claude Fable 5 returns an error. Switching to Claude Opus 4.7 is one line of code.
But Opus 4.7 isn't an equivalent substitute for complex code tasks and multi-step reasoning. Teams that hard-coded the Fable 5 endpoint spent the weekend on incident bridges. Teams with multi-provider gateways made a routing change. Zero emergency deploys. The architectural lesson is direct. ICRA, written to control hardware exports, now applies to a commercial AI API without advance notice and without per-user exemption. Architecture that assumes guaranteed model availability is demonstrably fragile. The precedent is set. Any frontier model can be targeted by a similar order. Keep hot fallbacks with current benchmarks. Don't sign contracts that assume continuous availability of a specific frontier model.
The second regulatory front came from where few expected it, Tennessee.
McMinnville and Coffee County approved unanimous moratoriums on June 9th. Nashville's Metropolitan Council followed that same night, advancing a 90-day pause on all data center licenses in Davidson County by a 26-1 vote. Warren County and Knox County were scheduled to vote on June 22nd. Since last fall, 9 Tennessee cities and counties have approved moratoriums, 5 in a single week.
Two concrete projects triggered Nashville. DC Blocks proposed a 69,000-square-foot 10-megawatt data center adjacent to Nashville Zoo, with licenses already filed for phase two of 202,000 square feet and 40 megawatt on the same site, three stories. Over 360,000 people signed a petition against the project. McMinnville was triggered by a 96,064-square-foot 25-megawatt data center from Hixson, powered by natural gas and diesel generators, whose developer didn't consult local authorities before publicly announcing the project. McMinnville approved an 18-month moratorium.
The executive order signed by Mayor Freddie O'Connell has a threshold with direct practical implications for anyone designing inference clusters. Any facility over 20,000 square feet or consuming more than 5 megawatts qualifies as a large data center subject to review. A single row of 64 H100 class GPU racks already exceeds 5 megawatts before accounting for cooling overhead.
And the pattern is national. 69 jurisdictions enacted moratoriums as of May 2026. New York, Seattle, Maine, the same pattern. Data Center Watch estimates that at least 75 projects totaling roughly $130 billion were blocked or delayed in just the first quarter of 2026, equivalent to all of 2025's disruption compressed into 3 months.
McMinnville City Administrator Nolan Ming was precise. A moratorium is not a permanent ban, it's a responsible timeout. But an 18-month timeout in McMinnville and 90 days in Nashville don't align with data center procurement timelines, 12 to 24 months from site selection to energization. A permit pause in the middle of that process can strand interconnection contracts and utility agreements already signed. Rural Tennessee is no longer a low-friction alternative to Ashburn or Phoenix. Site selection now needs to include community opposition risk before the RFP.
If demand for agents is real, and this week's numbers confirm it is, the hardware sustaining them also has to reorganize. Two concrete moves reveal where the real supply chain bottlenecks are.
First, optical interconnect. Coherent broke ground on expansion of its fab in Sherman, Texas. The site houses the world's first 6-inch wafer phosphide indium, INP, fab. The expansion receives $50 million from the CHIPS Act, plus $17 million from the Texas CHIPS Program and the Sherman Economic Development Corporation. Jensen Huang and Coherent CEO Jim Anderson were present at the groundbreaking.
Why does NP matter specifically now?
NVIDIA's Vera Rubin Ultra NVL576 connects 8 NVLink racks with 72 Rubin Ultra GPUs each, 576 GPUs operating as a single domain. At that scale, with hundreds of feet separating components across a data center floor, copper fails in energy efficiency. Retimers and signal conditioning hardware to push high-speed electrical signals across 8 racks consume power the cluster would rather spend on compute. Optics pay a conversion penalty once, electrical to photon, and then distance becomes essentially free. At this scale, the trade-off isn't optional.
The bottleneck is in wafer production. Most NP fabs in the world operate on 3- and 4-inch wafers. 6-inch wafers have approximately 4 times the usable area of a 3-inch wafer. Area scales with a square of diameter. More die per run, lower cost per unit, more supply headroom.
Huang quantified the pace at the groundbreaking.
50 years to build the first NP line in Sherman. In 1 year, production capacity has quadrupled.
In March, NVIDIA and Coherent formalized a multi-year strategic partnership. NVIDIA committed $2 billion for R&D, future capacity, and domestic manufacturing, plus a commitment to purchase multiple billions in laser and optical interconnect products. Sherman expansion executes that agreement. The difficulty in scaling isn't floor space, it's the compound semiconductors themselves. INP and gallium arsenide use different photoresists, different deposition chemistries, and work with wafers that break more easily than silicon. Tooling, yield management, and upstream chemical supply chains are thinner than silicon equivalents. The $50 million federal grant and $17 million in state and local support reflect exactly that gap. Without subsidized capital, the economics of domestic compound semiconductor expansion remain marginal at current volumes.
The second supply chain move is Intel, and the timelines here are as critical as the technology.
Intel's 14A node has its first external customer committed, Tesla, for the Terafab AI complex in Austin, with test production targeted for 2029. Everything else on Intel's foundry calendar, Ohio, Arizona, Oregon, depends on that single customer, leading to a second and third before two deadlines converging in the next 18 months.
What are those deadlines?
First, CEO Lip-Bu Tan told investors in January 2026 that prospective 14A buyers will make firm supplier decisions starting in the second half of 2026 and extending into the first half of 2027. Second, the 35% advanced manufacturing tax credit, signed into law in July 2025, covers only fab construction that begins before December 31st, 2026. Projects that slip to 2027 lose the credit entirely. Both clocks expire months apart, and both point to construction sites in Ohio.
Current production stays entirely in Arizona. Fab 52 on the Ocotillo campus in Chandler became Intel's first high-volume 18A facility in October 2025, building Panther Lake compute tiles. CTO Naga Chandrasekaran said the fab is capable of over 10,000 18A wafer starts per week, roughly 40,000 per month in total capacity, exceeding TSMC's Fab 21, Phases 1 and 2 combined. That's rated capacity, not current throughput.
18A yields won't reach standard industrial levels until early 2027. Ton confirmed in May 2026 that yields are improving 7 to 8% per month. Intel is actively limiting CPU output. Arizona's second fab, Fab 62, has no node assigned and is under construction with completion by 2028, functioning as overflow valve for 14A if Ohio delays, or additional 18A capacity if external bookings arrive first. Brookfield Infrastructure owns 49% of the Chandler joint venture, and Intel hasn't moved to repurchase that stake, so every wafer from both Arizona fabs carry revenue share obligations.
Ohio is the long-term bet. The new Albany site entered construction in 2022, with a first phase of $28 billion originally targeting 2025 production. A reset in February 2025 pushed Module 1 to 2030-2031 and Module 2 to 2032. Intel has already spent roughly $5 billion on nearly 1,000 acres with space for up to 8 fabs. Pace depends explicitly on customer commitments. Intel says it preserves flexibility to accelerate if demand justifies.
For architects evaluating non-TSMC options, the decision window is open now and closes in early 2027. Risk production in 2028, significant volume in 2029, same timeline projected for TSMC's A14. Demand signals are materializing. Inference and agentic AI workloads are redefining CPU to GPU ratios. Ton said customers report shifts from the training era norm, 1 CPU per 8 GPUs, to 1-to-1, and in some cases, 4 CPUs per GPU for inference. Teams wanting Ohio capacity in 2030-2031 need their chip partners engaged with Intel today.
We close with a tool that looks like internal research infrastructure, but has direct strategic implications for any organization that buys, deploys, or audits model capacity.
Allen AI and Hugging Face released Almo Eval on June 12th, an open-source evaluation harness that separates benchmark definition from execution policy. The project inherits from OLMES, the 2024 reproducibility standard that standardized prompt formatting and task formulation for Olmo and Tulu 3 families. OLMES solved paper inconsistency. Olmo Eval solves development loop speed.
What does it add concretely to what already exists?
Standard error and minimum detectable effect for each benchmark result, plus per instance comparison of identical questions across checkpoints. The central question, is a 2.4 percentage point variation between training iterations real signal or sample variance? Inference backends are interchangeable, local GPU, commercial API via Light LLM, or mock provider for cost-free dry runs. The six-layer abstraction, task, suite, harness, formatter, score, metric, allows the same task spec to run against baseline, tool-augmented, or remote API without modification. Agentic and multi-turn evaluations run in Docker, Podman, or modal containers when needed. The lightweight path is the default, and Olmo Eval only opts for the heavy setup when a benchmark truly requires it, unlike tools that use containers for everything.
The strategic point here isn't technical. It's about who controls the benchmark narrative. When a vendor announces a 3-point jump on GPQA Diamond, the relevant question isn't whether the number is correct. It's whether the delta is statistically distinguishable from noise given the sample size used, and whether the threshold was pre-registered or chosen after results arrived.
Without pre-registered thresholds, any statistical tool can become post-hoc rationalization with scientific gloss. Olmo Eval delivers the infrastructure to ask the right question. Discipline of use is still the responsibility of the team operating the evaluation.
Agents as deployable unit. The orchestration stack arrived and brought the cost invoice with it. Regulation arrived and established precedents no system architect can ignore. A commercial AI API can be shut down by executive order in 72 hours, and a GPU rack can be blocked by a city council vote of 26-1. The supply chain began to move, and the timelines are real and closing. What this week made clear is the question is no longer whether agents reach production. It's who controls the policies when they arrive, and whether your architecture survives when the model you chose vanishes from the API. Next edition on Friday. Have a good week.